Hi, I'm Lauren McGaughey with the Dallas Morning News.
Good afternoon. I'm Betsy Wade.
And I'm Leah Boylan.
And we are here to talk to Betsy Wade.
Yeah.
And Leah, with the honor of being Betsy's granddaughter, gets the first crack at her.
Yeah. One of the things I think we haven't heard at this conference, we've heard a lot about your career, is that you're also a great-grandmother as of this month.
I became a great-grandmother. It is my first great-grandmotherhood, and I'm really tickled because we have this, you know, nice 7-pound, 1-ounce bundle of joy.
Yeah, you got to meet her a few weeks ago, didn't you?
I did. I met her on her first birthday. She was born that day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I got to see you on your first birthday, too, but that was however many years ago.
Yeah.
We won't out your age, right?
One of the things I think I hear a lot about from my dad is about you balancing family and work, especially how you stayed out late with the New York Times, would get a drink after work. Oh. Having an interview.
We have another camp attendee coming in the room right now. Come on in.
It's your room.
How you would be out late and then wake up only a few hours later to drive the carpool. You know, when you did the Pentagon Papers and my dad was going off to college. those balances, how did you make those decisions? What happened?
Well, the whole secret weapon, of course, is that those of us who have two parents, both of whom are working, you obviously have some third person who is balancing it out, because it's not possible to balance it unless you literally have one day shift and one night shift.
Like a grandparent or a nanny or something?
Yes, someone who's there living in the house with you. And in our case, we had a housekeeper, nanny, Nana, they called her. We hired her when your dad's brother, Ben, was just a new baby. And she stayed with us until both of them were in college. And we had a very long, stable, important relationship, and it affected the boys' lives greatly because there was a solid person there who was going to deal with daily problems.
Mm-hmm.
You also, as I remember, had a nana, that was your mother's friend.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I developed a great relationship with her. I was just curious to hear more about thinking about like the current how women currently deal with having a family and having a career.
I assume they deal with it as it has been dealt with. You're going to have to get somebody else in there.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that your cousin Carol. I believe that your cousin Carol has got her mother primed to look after the great grandchild, or my great grandchild, our great grandchild, because I noticed that she had a full set of crib and a high chair and a playpen and the whole thing for a new baby in her house, just as if this were the house the baby lived in. And I don't know how you're going to do it otherwise. I think that the so-called enlarged family, or engorged family, perhaps we should say, requires someone who's steady, who's there, and who can do the important things. One of the things that I did do, because it's possible in a skill like journalism, was that I had an odd work week.
Mm-hmm.
I took Fridays and Saturdays off, and I worked Sundays, which meant that I could go to the school conferences with the teachers. I tried to take charge of buying their shoes, but Lucille Harrison, our nana, got better at that than I was. So she would say, Betsy, it's time for new shoes for Ben. So out would come the purse and the shoes would come along. But that was a little adjustment. It's not possible in every job. Yeah. But I know, for instance, if you get into a place like Milwaukee or Madison, Wisconsin, where they have multi-shifts in the existing industries, it becomes possible to get somebody who has a shift mm-hmm. off who might share a life with you.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of what my boss does. She has a under 1-year-old, and she comes in early and leaves at about 4
yes.
so that she can be home with her when she's
This is the kind of planning. You cut some corners.
Yeah.
You know, you do some little pieces, and sometimes you don't always get to see the school play.
Yeah.
But you have to weigh the value of the school play against whether you're going to be able to go and, let's say, look at colleges.
Yeah. Something that Leah told me about just when we were chatting is when you, I think it was when you went to the Times, you started dressing a little different.
Yes.
You cut your hair.
Yes, I did.
How do you feel like you were being perceived by your male coworkers? Do you feel like they saw you for who you were? Was that who you were, or?
I wasn't Betsy Wade then. I was something else. I was clearly some sort of experiment.
Oh, no.
Well, it was a 6-month trial period mm-hmm. For jobs at that grade level at the Times. So I figured I had 6 months to get through. I wasn't terribly worried because the men who had taught me at the Columbia School of Journalism were all Times editors.
Okay.
That was how they ran that. They were adjuncts. Mm-hmm. They ran the class in the morning, and then, of course, being the morning paper, they went to work in the afternoon. So I was taught by them, and I knew that they knew how to do it, and that I had learned how to do it from the right people.
Mm-hmm.
But I also knew I was going to be sitting in a room where there were no other women.
Yeah.
Because all the women reporters were on day shift.
Were you in a? Were the editors in a different physical location?
It's the great horseshoe copy desk of those days mm-hmm. Was present, and there were 3 broken arcs. It was national desk, foreign desk, local desk, mm-hmm. city desk. And these were all men. There are dozens of photographs of yeah. these famous copy desks. And then there was one over there, that was the obituary desk, which still exists. And then the sports desk was in the sports department, mm-hmm. So that they didn't have to disturb everybody else but the, you know, shouting noises yeah. that were going on. But I decided that I had to be as conservative as possible. Mm. And this is a joke on me, in a way, because many years later, when I met Barbara Garson, the famous radical, to go and give a talk up at Vassar. Mm-hmm. I was meeting her in Grand Central Terminal, and I went over and I said to a woman, I said, are you going up to Vassar? We on the Vassar? Yeah. I said, which one is Barbara Garson? And she said, I don't know, I'm trying to figure out. So I saw a woman who was sort of dressed like a gypsy, you know, long dresses and clanging
yes,
bracelets
some
and
tell.
Things hanging off her ears. And I thought, well, that's certainly Barbara Garson
yes.
if I ever saw a radical one. It turned out that the woman in the custom-made suit of more or less the color of an army uniform with a suitcase, a very neat suitcase, that was Barbara Garson. And I said to her later, you know, I really had a hard time picking you out of that group. And she said, well, I explained. And she said, you know, Betsy, you just don't know anything. If you're a freelance writer who writes books, you gotta look okay to everybody.
Hmm.
You can't walk in dressed like a flamenco dancer. Mm-hmm. So Barbara and I became very good friends because she realized that I didn't understand anything about her life and that she understood even less about mine. Mm-hmm.
So were you trying to blend in with the men?
I was trying to be invisible, if that was possible.
Wow.
I have to tell you that before I got there, I didn't know what they were going to do. I didn't know if they were going to put a screen around me.
Wow.
Or, you know, put me in a corner or put some kind of cordon sanitaire around me so nobody came near me. It turned out they just put me right next to the guy who was the head of the city copy desk, so he could show me everything. Mm-hmm. And there's a photograph of me on that day, was taken by a staff member, and it shows a pack of cigarettes, I'm sorry to say, a style book, mm-hmm. a pencil, an ashtray, which was the core of the big paper rolls that they had on the Associated Press roll.
Yeah.
You know, when they take them off, they have these two little metal things, so they just used ashtrays and threw them out where they were. And here I am, and my fingers are like this. I'm so tense. Everything is rigid and in position, but that's what I looked like that night.
Yeah. No, it came to mind also with us talking about how you learned about, my grandpa taught you about sports.
Right.
Because that's something that I'm experiencing in my office, is having to learn about sports because my coworkers all talk about sports and I just want to blend in. I don't necessarily want to stand out, but I'm learning about sports.
It's interesting how some things don't change.
The two first women sports writers at the Times, mm-hmm. One of them was the daughter of the sports editor of the New York Post, and she's still around. And the other was the daughter of the owner of Herman's Sports Shop in New York, which was a really big, it had a two-store chain. And Robin Herman was, I mean, they grew up knowing how to read the complicated scoring
yeah.
systems and so on.
Yeah.
So they became, Jane Gross became the first female reporter for the Times, mm-hmm. coming from the sports department.
Hmm.
But it was, and Jim did. Jim sat down and drilled me, and he said, now, the names of the teams in the
American
World
League.
Series in the World Series this fall are, who is the leading pitcher, what's the name, and all these nicknames came pouring out. So I committed the best I could. So at least I didn't try to smart mouth, but I had some idea of what they were talking about and when they were going to need to turn on the radio or the television set to see what was happening.
Mm-hmm. So
how are you coming on learning about
yeah.
sports?
Yeah.
Which
very,
ones do you like?
Not very well. It's mostly basketball.
Oh, really? I would think
actually.
It would be football.
I mean, football's going on, so they have their fantasy league. I have not joined the fantasy league yet.
Don't
because,
do it.
yeah, because that involves money, and there's
That's
a,
right.
yeah,
yeah.
there's a little bit more.
They also get really offended if you win.
Yes.
Yes.
So
oh,
that
can
be a whole.
That's true.
I know that from running because my coach told me that when you're in a race with both men and women, if you go ahead of a man and they see that ponytail swishing, they go crazy about the ponytail. And I see like men try to pass me after if I'm running past them.
What, do they want to pull your ponytail?
No, because it's a woman who's beating them.
Oh, I see.
Get,
you just
I
have to
like
cut your hair like Betsy's.
It makes you go faster. It streamlines you.
So this is a kind of a more specific question, but we talked about it a little bit yesterday. We were talking about Hillary and how like,
yes.
she was perceived as not being warm.
Yes.
And
I think lovable was the word we were using.
Lovable, yeah.
Yes.
And I don't know if you have any thoughts on the Jill Abramson firing at the Times, that the top editor that was let go.
I do not. I can. I have only two, because I wasn't there,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't on the inside, and
yeah.
I didn't know anything that was being said.
Well, I have a related question. You don't
but
have
let me,
to wait.
Let me finish.
Yeah.
She graduated from school
mm-hmm.
in the class with Leah's father.
Yeah.
That is how long it took to get a woman up the ladder that I had hoped to be on until my son graduated
yeah,
from college.
Yeah, a full generation.
A full generation.
Yeah.
So one of the interesting things is that Jill Abramson will always answer the phone for Richard Boylan because he's the class agent.
That's great.
You have a related question.
I have a related question. So, but we were talking about that the Hillary thing, the Jill Abramson thing, women in leadership.
Yes.
There's this kind of conversation that we're always having now about, well, if a man is tough, he's tough.
Right.
And if a woman is tough, she's a bitch. Yeah, exactly. I mean, how do we get past that? Like, it's so frustrating. Like,
I think you have to get past some tip point, what is it that the mathematicians call it? When the weight is totally in the center, when the strength is equally divided. That's the only way I can think of it.
Okay.
And I don't mean, 10 men and 10 women. I mean where perhaps we might think of Mrs. Graham of the Washington Post, where the head person is a woman, but she's been there so long and she's part of the family that I don't think they think of her as a woman anymore. Mm-hmm. They simply think of her as the owner.
Mm-hmm.
And this may be one of the ways through. But it's I gotta tell you, I think it's extremely hard because when I was running for president of the Guild Local, somebody, and I don't know what possessed them, gave the vice presidential candidate, a man who was from the Daily News, really vulgar drawing that had been made of Frank Mazza and me, and sex is nothing. This was just awful.
Of the
and
two it, of you?
It was a handmade sketch, it was like graffiti.
Yeah.
Of me and Frank Mazza, and I don't even want to describe what was in it. But there was something about this that just threatened the Daily News people so fiercely.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether they didn't want to have a Times woman for the president of the local, or they didn't want to have a Times woman with a Daily News man who was support. And we knew that was the only way we could take it, was to have the two biggest papers.
Mm-hmm.
And we did.
I think, did you have the next question?
Yeah.
Well, we have our joint question now.
Going back to thinking about our relationship and how I've moved to New York City, one of the great joys has been you introducing me to so many cultural institutions, especially Film Forum.
I'm so glad. So glad.
Yeah, and I've really loved getting to know New York City through you. But I was also curious to hear your thoughts on the cultural value of these institutions and kind of the role they've played in your life, especially related to New York City over the years.
Well, it's what you grow up with.
Yeah.
I mean, I am sure there are parts of your life west of Boston that are engraved and are with you permanently. One of the very first things I saw that I didn't understand but I grasped was Guernica by Picasso. Picasso had given it to the Museum of Modern Art to handle and to hold until Franco died, until the Spanish dictator died, which was going to be years and years after Guernica was painted. I think Guernica affected the kids who grew up in New York of my generation, or at least the kids whose parents took them to the Modern Museum, which didn't cost as much to go to in those days. And there it is. And Judy Barrick, my friend whom you know, when she went to Spain earlier this year, the first thing she did was to go see Guernica, which is now back in the museum in Madrid, where it had always intended to go. But Guernica affected me almost permanently. There's that naked light bulb that's hanging. The whole world has become crazy, and it's all black and white and gray. And if you haven't seen it lately, buy a postcard. Do the best you can.
So we skipped over one question, so I'm going to ask it real quick.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a small one.
Help yourself.
So we're always so like down in dumps and like everything's terrible, or look at this thing and what's your war story and tell me something horrible that happened to you. But do you think that there's anything that we've solved since you filed your lawsuit or since you started out in journalism, for women in journalism? Is there anything that we're past?
Well, I guess we have to say, you know, we are certainly past the idea that women can't, let's say, can't do numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I think of Leah as a prime example, but then I go to that movie called The Invisible, the Black Women Who
Oh,
were,
yeah.
The pre-computer
Hidden
women.
Figures.
Hidden Figures.
Hidden Figures.
Yeah.
And that movie, I think, moved me more almost than anyone
it
I've
was
seen
wonderful.
Lately. Because, number one of these women is still alive, and she can give the lie to it if that movie is wrong or put together wrong, so we know we've got the real thing. In addition to which, the numberless, endless, terrible sacrifices, the idea of hauling your whole work product into a toilet stall halfway across the campus and doing that thing, and here were Black women who were engaged in the process of something in high science that was maybe going to save the world. We didn't know. There was just no way. So I think we've gotten past that. I think the idea that if you hire a Black person for a white person's job, you're going to have to hire two Black people because they're only half as smart. I think we're past that. I think every once in a while you run into a situation where you've got to reprove this, but I think it gets proved pretty easily. But it's been a long, terrible haul, and I think you have to almost think before the Civil War. I mean, when the New York Historical Society did its show about slavery in New York, it was as if the schools had been out there teaching something to do with icebergs. I mean, it was as if nobody had ever heard of the idea that there was slavery in New York. There was slavery in New York. There was slavery in Connecticut.
Yeah.
It's very, very hard and it's very slow, but I think we have worked at it.
Okay, so this is the last question.
Any question you want.
Well, this is it's funny that you said that.
Ask you this question.
Yeah, so we both want to know. We both want to know, when did you get your first diaphragm?
I was, just a moment here while I calculate. I was a junior in college. I think I was about the same age as the women in Mary McCarthy's book, The Goop.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to tell you, because it gives me pride to say, the therapist I was going to at that time, and I was going to a therapist because my mother's mental health was below the normal line. Mm-hmm. It was really, every 7 years she was hospitalized, either in a manic phase or in a depressed phase. But the doctor gave me, he said, here's a card. He said, you go to this address, and it was something like 300 East 12th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, there's a phone buzzer that says BC Association. He said, just ring the doorbell. Birth Control Association. It was one of Margaret Sanger's early offices.
Oh my God.
Wow.
And he had just stayed there the
was
whole
it in New
time.
York City?
In New York City, while the others, you know, proliferated. And I was terrorized. You know, what is happening to me? But the therapist was right. And the therapist was very businesslike about it. He said, I don't want any nonsense from you. Just come and tell me that you've been fitted for a diaphragm and that you have a diaphragm.
And it was fairly easy to get. When you went,
I went.
Kind of
I got it there. I think he gave me a bill for $30.
A male doctor,
which was a lot of which was. But I it was probably Margaret Sanger's son who was still alive the last time I looked. But it was expensive. I think it was $30, which was a lot of dough. But at any rate. Somebody objective, somebody from the outside, and he didn't ask me a lot of whys or wherefores. He just told me this was what I was going to do. And, you know, as you go home, it's like the you know, when your father and his brother were going to the dentist, mm-hmm. after they went to a particularly tedious session of having their teeth straightened, I would take them to the toy store and buy them another dinky toy. Mm-hmm. You wonder why your father has so many dinky toys?
That's he likes dinky toys.
Anyway, so I went home with my new toy to play with it. I mean, so
and
there
on
you
that
are.
Note.
Yeah. On that note, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
have
it.
Done what you
great
wanted
conversation.
To do?
Yeah.
Good. All right.
All right.
There
great.
You are.
Thanks, Betsy and Leah.
Yeah.
Well,
awesome.
Thank you.
Right.
It's been a wonderful treat to meet you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You too.
Are you living with somebody now? She says, asking a personal question.
I am. I am living with someone.
Did she come to Jaws? Is she a journalist?
It is a man.
It is a man.
It is a man. He's not here at Jaws. He is also a journalist. He's an investigative reporter.
Good.
And we have a cat.
I had no idea that a human couple could have a cat.
Hardy har har.
Hardy har har is right.
I have a cat too.
Yay.
Yeah.
And the new baby has a cat, which is about six times larger than the baby. Too funny.
Okay.
All right.
We're
going to have a wonderful time now because we've done all our work. Huh?
Yes.
Yes.
There's nothing
all
left
right.
to do.
Thanks, StoryCorps. Signing out.
Yeah.